You're listening to KRUU 100.1 FM, the voices of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. Grassroots, listener-supported, community-powered, and solar-powered radio broadcasting live from the Cultural District in Fairfield, Iowa.
And I just read that even on a cloudy day, the solar's still working.
It's still working. And this is Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline. I'm your host, Monica Hadley, and with me is my co-host and mother, Caroline Kilborn.
Good afternoon, everyone. And don't forget, if you want to rehear this broadcast or want to tell your friends about it, which I'm sure you will, we rebroadcast this on Monday morning.
Monday morning, 8 a.m. Uh-huh. Yes. And then we also have a podcast available at a later date. So check the writersvoices.com website for that. And check the KRUUFM.com website for how you can help keep the station on the air. You know, we do rely on listener support.
Yes,
and there's also a lot of content on there, a lot of archives, a lot of great shows. So even if you don't like Writers' Voices, you'll probably find something else you do
love.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, gosh, yes.
So, Mom, who do we have with us today?
We have James J. Owens, and he's a professor of management communication at the University of Southern California Marshall School of Business. James is the founder and CEO of the international children's charity, The World is Just a Book Away, which promotes literacy by developing libraries and educational programs. Since its inception in 2008, this has built 90 libraries, touching the lives of more than 70,000 children in three countries. James collected and edited the 60 essays in this book over the course of 15 years. And his profit from this book will benefit the charity. He's also a writer, corporate leadership coach, and a motivational speaker. Lives with his son, Alexander, in Santa Monica, California. So,
welcome to Writers' Voices, James.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Do you prefer to go by James or Jim? Or something else?
James.
James, awesome. Well, that's our station manager is also James Moore, who's done a stellar job at keeping a community station going here Fairfield, Iowa. So James, a funny thing happened on the way to you writing a book, huh?
You mean the 15 years that it took me to get there?
The 15 years in the 90 libraries.
Yes, I started the book in 2002, and the first submission, when you might remember Fess Parker, who played Davy Crockett in Daniel Boone.
Yes.
And then I thought, when I started The World is Just a Book Away, that I would finish it in a year or maybe two, but I didn't really have a realistic sense of how much demand there is on the time of prominent people. So 15 years later, we now have 60 people in The World is Just a Book Away, and it's just been published. And yes, in the interim, I realized that there was a bigger possibility at hand, and that I decided I would donate the profit from my book to a children's literacy charity I would found to build a library. And then a lot of people joined and donated and created a lot of energy around it. So initially, we started out in 2009 to build our first library in Sidoarjo, Indonesia, which experienced the world's worst mudflow disaster. And now we have 90 libraries in three countries, which, as you said, put the book on pause for a while, because I hadn't initially expected it was a very pleasant surprise that the charity grew and that we've been able to reach this many children.
I think it's just a wonderful story that you had this concept of writing a book, and out of it grew this worldwide charity, 90 libraries, tens of thousands of children benefiting from it, and then finally the book.
And then finally the book, which is published by USC Libraries Press. So I just think it's so perfect that my book about how reading and books inspired prominent people is published by USC Libraries Press to buy books and build libraries for kids who have none.
Mm. Now, and the name of
15 years, but it feels like the timing was perfect.
Absolutely. So the name of the charity is The World is Just a Book Away? Is that the name?
Yes, we also go by WIJABA for short, which is World is Just a Book Away. WIJABA.
Ah.
Jabba the Hutt.
So was that, did you have that as your book title from the very beginning?
I did. Wow. Yeah, from the beginning I knew that was the book title. And then I thought, as I said, I thought we were going to build one library for kids, and it seemed logical to name the charity the same name as the book, and then it grew from there.
Well, tell us what inspired the concept, how you came up with the concept of this book in the first place. And what is the concept?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
And kind of describe the concept for us. What are you asking these people in the essays? What are they, what's the message?
I'm guessing the underlying or the deepest motivation is probably similar to your having your show, which is that I'm a passionate reader. And reading has been, in fact, I open my introduction to the book with the words, books have always been my refuge. I cannot imagine my life without them. And when I had the idea in about 2000, 2001 for The World is Just a Book Away, I started because I was really running out of ideas about things I really wanted to read, that I was really interested in reading, and I thought, wouldn't it be really interesting to find out about how reading and which books inspired prominent people? So I'll just start contacting them, and they'll do the interviews, and it will be as easy as that.
Yeah. Sure.
I grew up in a small town in Massachusetts, beautiful, beautiful region of the world across from this beautiful cornfield that I used to, I used to look out at the cornfield and I would read my books, and then I could look out at the cornfield, I'd see castles and monuments, and I dreamed through these books. I did not, however, when I started the book, I had a lot of dreams, but I didn't realize that a lot of these people can get thousands of requests per year or even per month to do really worthwhile causes, and so it's very difficult for them to decide, what they are able to do given just simply the number of hours in the day. And I didn't have a good sense of that. So for some people in the book, it took me up to 10 years to get to them and to get the submission secured for the book.
Well, how did you decide whom to approach?
I feel like, well, first of all, I had a list. I had a target list, and some of those people are in the book, and many of those people are not. And then it was a lot of networking, through people you may not expect as the earliest point of contact, and it could be, the 6 or 7 degrees of separation. One of the people in the book, for example, is His Holiness the Dalai Lama. And Dalai Lama and Mikhail Gorbachev were two of the final submissions for the book. There are 60 in The World is Just a Book Away, as you mentioned. And actually, Archbishop Tutu, who I'd been in touch with much earlier, and who has been a supporter of the book and the charity, it was actually through Archbishop Tutu that I was ultimately referred to the Dalai Lama, and the Dalai Lama came into the book.
That's amazing. Yeah.
So
I know that's kind of cool, right?
It is.
Archbishop
it really
Tutu
is.
Referred me to the Dalai Lama. I like. Yeah.
There probably aren't all that many people in the world who can say that.
I know. It's been such an interesting and blessed. I really feel blessed to
Well, how did you get...
I actually feel more like this book chose me than I chose it. I really feel like I had to, and I was meant to create this book.
How did you get to the Archbishop Tutu?
Oh, well, there you have the 7 degrees of separation. That was the early day, you know, earlier on in the internet. I found out that his daughter, Reverend Mfo Tutu, was... I think she was in the process of finalizing her becoming, ordained. And I found that she was in a church, I believe, in Virginia. And somehow, as I recollect, I have all of this in notes somewhere, but notes will be assembled after we're done with promoting the book.
Right.
I believe I called the church, and I got an email address. And then his daughter, Archbishop Tutu's daughter, emailed me back and gave me the name of her father's assistant. And then from there, because obviously he has so many requests on him, and he's such an amazing person in the world, and anytime you hear his voice and you listen to him, he's such an incredible person. That took many points of contact after that with his assistant and with his office to reach him. And then if I open to his page in the book, he comes right after Ted Turner, Archbishop Tutu. And each submission is signed and dated, so they're like letters to the reader. Mm-hmm. So Archbishop Tutu signed and dated his submission on April 15th, 2005. And the Dalai Lama was, His Holiness the Dalai Lama was December 8th, 2016. So I had been in touch with Archbishop Tutu since 2005, and he's been supportive of the book and of the charity. And finally, when I asked to refer to the Dalai Lama, he, I think, knew and trusted the project by that time and felt comfortable doing it.
Wow. Now, each of these, the essays in the book, people are talking about the books that most influenced their lives?
Yes. So the question is really that intrigued me is which books and how did reading inspire you, or how did it influence your life? And some people discuss one book, and some people discuss many books or several books, and each time describing why these books touch them or influence them, and is really linked to one of my two main hopes or desires for the world is just a book away, which is that it will inspire people through reading my book. It will inspire, or the submissions in my book, to get to know, to come to know books they might not ever have considered. And I think that helps us all expand our horizons.
Not only that, but, you know, these people that did contribute, it took a good bit of their time to stop and reflect on which books influenced them. And
did.
Yeah, and it's possible that people who did not respond to your inquiries just didn't have the time to do that.
And that is true. I had people who did that, or simply a lot. The networking is very important, and when it's interesting when you do a project like this, because you're not usually talking to the prominent person, him or herself. You're speaking to someone involved in the chain of their offices, and one of the questions is who else is in the book. And I'll tell you, or your listeners, I'll share that when you share with people that they get to be the first person in the sandbox, it doesn't seem to resonate very well with people. And there are, but once, for example, I remember there was a distinct shift when Martin Scorsese became involved, when Liam Neeson became involved early on, that helped enormously because I knew him from, and I still know him from something else. So, and Liam Neeson wrote a piece as well as the afterword, and Jane Goodall, and then Senator Kennedy and Queen Noor of Jordan. And then it became easier and easier simply because I think the offices saw the credibility of the project and
right.
were more comfortable presenting it to the person I was seeking to have in the book.
Right.
Now, did you end up speaking personally to each of the people in the book?
Not each of them, but many, the vast majority of them, I would say. I've never tallied the you know, which ones I haven't spoken to, but I have spoken to most of them, and they're, since I've been doing this for 15 years, and for example, Meet Geese, who, as you may know, she hid the Anne Frank family during World War II. She signed her submission when she was 100 years old.
Oh, my gosh.
And Simon Wiesenthal when he was 94 years old. So I have people in this book who are no longer with us, more than a dozen people who are no longer with us, and I felt really great about being able to bring their words to life through The World Is Just a Book Away.
You're listening to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is James J. Owens, editor of The World Is Just a Book Away and founder of the charity of that same name that has built 90 libraries for children through in three countries. And what are the three countries that you're active in?
In Indonesia, we have three hubs because our intention is to build hubs of at least 25 so we can partner with the local community and have offices. Our third hub, which is Bali, is, I think, at about 19 now. So mm-hmm. we have staff who are a short plane ride away. And in Mexico, we're in Chihuahua, Mexico, which was absolutely, had a horrible time with the drug trafficking problems
mm-hmm.
and the drug trade going through mm-hmm. Chihuahua and the impact that had on children. In fact, the first school we opened, I believe five fathers had been assassinated in 2 years prior to our opening that first library. And the children had no safe place to do their homework, and that was really beautiful that we were able to provide that. And then we have a pilot project at a charter school here in Los Angeles, California.
And if someone wanted to support this charity, how would they find you?
And that I would welcome very much because people often think that, I think with philanthropy, people often think you have to be a multimillionaire or you have to be able to give a lot of money. And of course, a lot of money is welcome. I've always operated on a relatively small, tight budget because we've also been very efficient. So the reason I state that before saying where to donate is because even as little as $2 buys a book for children in Indonesia who have not ever seen books, literally. I even had to ask my translator to if I had misunderstood, who had never seen books. So as little as $2 does that, or $7,500 builds a library in Indonesia and $15,000 builds a library in Mexico. They would go to, they can Google The World Is Just a Book Away, or wijaba.org, which is WIJABA, which is the acronym for World Is Just a Book Away.
Wow.
And then please click the donate button, and and people can donate whatever is in their means, and know that it really does serve a purpose and can really provide books for children who have none and allow them to shift their, you know, break the cycle of poverty and empower them to change themselves and their communities.
Because literally every dollar helps.
Every dollar helps, literally.
Yeah. Right.
And literarily.
Yeah. Yes.
And right. literarily. Most of it.
Good, good.
So, in the process of gathering these essays, I know there's a lot, you know, you request the essay, but how did the editing process work for you? Did you Was there a lot of editing that had to be done? Was there a lot of back and forth? Was that difficult?
That really depended on the person. And it went from almost no editing to my making suggestions. And there are people in here, there are many people in here for whom English isn't a first language. So, for example, Simon Wiesenthal sent his in German originally. And I do speak German, but not... I needed to have my translation checked and then go back to him and verify it and back and forth. So that was a very interesting one. And of course, at the end, when we're finalizing the book, then you, in the Chicago style rules, then you have to do a lot of editing with punctuation and capitalization and italicizing and all of that. In the process itself, before each submission was finalized, I would read them and talk to the people, edit them, make suggestions, and again, it depended on the person.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you find that most people, not English, not English born or English speaking, most of them could write in English, or did you get a lot of foreign people writing?
Well, I don't know if, for example, I don't know if certain of them, I assume, wrote in their native language and had someone help them translate mm-hmm. before I received it. The only one I actually received in a foreign language was Simon Wiesenthal's in German.
Now, the people that you have in here, it's really a wide variety of people. Now, I've seen other books that are similar to this, you know, essays by famous people, often on books. Or there's a couple other. There's one that we did about a year ago. I can't remember the title now. 100 books that changed my life, or something that I think it was books that changed my life, and there was 100 people in there. But you have it seems like a broader range of writers, of essayists in here.
People from all walks of life.
All walks of life. Some of them, you know, many whose names most people would recognize,
right.
But many whose names were unfamiliar to me. A lot of foreigners. Would you say it's like half Americans and half international?
Well, I never actually looked at it that way. There is certainly a mix of Americans and international.
Right. So,
for example, alphabetically, the book is alphabetized, and alphabetically, it starts with Buzz Aldrin, who, of course, most people know was the second man to set foot on the moon, and it ends with Nobel Peace Laureate, Peace Prize Laureate, Dr. Muhammad Yunus, for his work with microcredit, and he's Bangladeshi. So it really truly does involve people from all over the world, and from, as you said, from heads of state, royalty, and Nobel Peace Prize winners to actors, musicians, and politicians.
So,
people from all different walks.
So what criteria were you using in selecting whom you wanted to put in this book?
I really thought about well, of course, access is very important, who I was able to have access to. But I was given access to many other, through the process, to many other people as well. I really sought something about the person that I found was inspirational, and something about what they did. For example, Keith Black is one of the best-known brain surgeons in the world. Shobha Day is one of the best-selling authors in India. And, of course, you know, many of your listeners will know Dr. Jane Goodall, who actually wrote the foreword for the book, and we have a partnership with her, an environmental education partnership with her program, Roots and Shoots. So people that I found had done something that was very inspirational in some way, and that I thought their stories would be interesting for others to read, both the people who are widely recognizable and the people that you may not know the name of right away, like the head of the World Wildlife Foundation, but who plays such a prominent role in the world once you Google him and you realize who he is. So people who have done things that I found inspirational.
Yeah, there were a few I had to Google as I was reading through to find out who they were and what they did. Now, the format of the book is really interesting, too, because, like you said, you arranged it alphabetically and by the essayist, not by the book that they're recommending.
Right.
And you have a really lovely drawing. Each essay, the front page of it, or the first page, is a drawing of the person, their signature, and a quote. And then the essay is on the following pages. So tell us a little bit about how and why you chose this format and who did these wonderful drawings.
I never, along the way, people had started talking about, oh, you should include the pictures of the people. You should include photographs of the people. And that never really spoke to me. So it just wasn't how I visualized this book. It didn't feel right for this book, for The World Is Just a Book Away. And my assistant, who helps me with all the logistics of running The World Is Just a Book Away, her name is Ryan Acklin. And one day she came to me with a drawing of Jane Goodall. And she said, I hope I'm not being presumptuous, but I was wondering if you'd be interested in including portraits in the book. I knew she was an artist, but I really didn't know that she was anywhere near as talented as she is to be able to capture these people. I certainly think that she has captured them beautifully. And if you look at, for example, if you look at Lauren Bacall's portrait, I think it's just striking, with the Dalai Lama's portrait, or so many of them.
They are wonderful, and
yeah, they are.
I mean, portraiture is such a difficult art.
Absolutely, and I think Ryan Acklin did a beautiful job capturing each of them. So that was it, really. She came to me with a portrait of Jane Goodall, and I said, I love it. And then we decided to do the cover of the book. I don't believe you have the final copy of the book.
No, I don't.
Because it's just been released and it's available on Amazon now. But the cover of the book is a compilation of everyone's portrait, everyone who's in the book. So all 60 people.
Oh, how cool is that?
Yeah, really.
I'm in the corner.
That's wonderful.
I've got a peeking out of the corner. All 60 of the participants are on the cover and then placed differently on the back. And the dust jacket is actually see-through plastic, or I don't know what the technical term for it is, but it's a thick see-through. So that, because we didn't want to emboss the words onto the people's faces.
Mm-hmm.
So the title is on the spine and then on the dust jacket.
Oh, that was well done. Well done. Yeah.
Thank you. I can't take credit for it. I told them I didn't want to have the words embossed on the faces, but the publishers, USC Library Press, came up with the idea of having this very unique cover.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I just pulled it up on Amazon so I could look at it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes, you can see it. Yes, if you pull it up on Amazon, you can see what the final cover looks like.
Oh, wow. Is neat.
And know that when you buy this book, you're also helping to build libraries.
Absolutely.
Yes. That's one of my favorite things about it. When I it was also, it was in 2008 when I realized that there was a greater opportunity at hand, even than the book, which was already, I felt so blessed to be a part of, that if I would donate my profit from the book, it would help to buy books and build libraries for kids. And so that's, the book really has two intentions. One is to promote literacy and reading for readers, for the people who read the book, and inspire them to read books they might not have ever considered. And the second is to promote The World Is Just a Book Away, the charity, and to help buy books for kids who have none, and build libraries and fund our educational programs for them.
Now, James, you said when you started working on this book, it was because of your own love for reading and wanted to find some more books to read. you wanted recommendations from these people. And
I thought I was creating a reading list. Well, other people will be interested in this reading list too, and that's when I thought it would take just a year or two.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, but obviously it did not. I think the book is it shows that you took your time and
right,
spent the time that it needed to make it a wonderful, wonderful book.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Have you written other books?
I've published a lot of articles, and I've had stories published in anthologies. But this is my first full-on book. I haven't had a lot of time in the past 15 years to write anything else. Although in the past 15 years, I have written stories, two stories that have been published in anthologies in Ireland. But this really has been my main focus. After I teach at USC, as you mentioned, I'm full-time faculty at USC. I run the charity, and I was finishing the book and
wow.
being a dad. That kind of took up, you know, that's my life sliced.
And when do you sleep?
I have my life sliced up.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. No kidding. Wow. Well, James, why don't you read one of the essays for us today? And this is...
I feel like I'd like to read a portion of Jane Goodall's, which is Jane Goodall, if I can just take a moment to say how amazing networking is before I read. Would that be okay before I read?
Oh, absolutely. Sure.
So Jane Goodall, I reached initially through a connection, a faculty member at USC, and then through her chief of staff, a vice president at Jane Goodall Institute, Mary Lewis, who's now become a dear friend and is on the advisory board of the charity The World Is Just a Book Away, and then to Jane herself, who through the years went from being Dr. Goodall, she's not a very formal person, so she didn't really like the Dr. Goodall part, to Dr. Jane, to now Jane, who's 83 years old and travels 300 days a year helping people to understand the importance of protecting the environment and inspiring children. And so I went from having this talk with her initially, and then having her do her submission, to getting to know her over the years, to becoming a friend, and now The World Is Just a Book Away partnered with Jane Goodall's Roots and Shoots Children's Environmental Education Program, and we're expanding that in Indonesia to 250 schools for 6,000 children, and who now have access to this environmental education program. And that's, I think, a beautiful symbol of what networking can become. She initially was a submission in the book, then she became a friend, and now 6,000 children have access to this environmental education program.
Wow.
And we intend on keeping that going. So Jane Goodall's been a very important part of the process. And as I mentioned, she also wrote a beautiful foreword to the book. So I'd like to read you a bit. I'll read you the first page of hers. Would that be okay?
Oh, that's fine. Thank you.
Okay. And this first part is that she's quoting her mother. If things go wrong, if you're disappointed, or if you're really sad, just curl up with a book. In a few minutes, you can be in another world and forget things that are bothering you in this one. When you finish the book, you'll feel refreshed and renewed. End quote. I think there is real wisdom in those words, which my mother spoke so often, and books have been a great comfort to me throughout my life. I so loved books as a child that I often had trouble tearing myself away from whatever I was reading. When my family sat down to a meal together, we talked. If a question arose at mealtime that no one could answer, someone would get the encyclopedia to look it up. Other than that, we had to put aside whatever book we were reading before each meal. Sunday lunch, however, was an exception. It was a very special time in our house because we were allowed to read at the table. Sitting at the table with a book, curling up in front of the fire with a book, taking a book up into the top of my favorite tree, reading under the bedclothes at night when I was supposed to have my light out, I grew up in an atmosphere of books. Although I can't recall the first book I read, I distinctly recall the first book that made a terrific impact on me. I must have been about 7 when I found a copy of Dr. Doolittle by Hugh Lofting at the local library, checked it out, and read it 3 times in 1 week. As the due date came nearer, I just couldn't bear to have to give it back. The night before I had to return it, I stayed up late, reading with my torch under the bedclothes. The following Christmas, my grandmother, who knew how much I loved the story, gave me a copy. I can still remember the thrill of opening that parcel. Dr. Doolittle fed into my passion for animals. He learns to speak animal languages from Polynesia, the parrot, who educates him to be observant. Watch how a dog twitches his nose, and pay attention to how a horse flicks his ear. These things are actually terribly important for anyone studying animal behavior. I found it magical then, and I still find it magical today. In that first book, Dr. Doolittle takes circus animals back to Africa, where they have many adventures. I believe that this sparked my passion for Africa. I read all the other Dr. Doolittle books after that, and I continued to dream of that far-off continent, which was home to all of those wonderful animals.
Thank you, James.
That's the first page of her submission. Wow. Most of the first page of her submission. She goes on to talk about Tarzan and falling in love with Tarzan.
Oh yeah.
She was that Tarzan married the wrong. When she talks, she always says how upset she was that Tarzan married the wrong Jane.
The wrong Jane. And isn't there a new movie that just came out? Jane?
There's a wonderful documentary called Jane. We were able to go to my son and I, to the premiere of it at the Hollywood Bowl and see her the night before. Uh-huh. And it's a beautiful movie, which I would recommend to anyone. And really beautiful, and helps understand the unique impact that Jane Goodall, as the woman who changed the definition of the word man, had on the world. And one other thing I'd like to mention is she starts with the children's books, and then she goes into an environmental book that deeply impacted her, Rachel Carlson's Silent Spring.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
The reason it's called Silent Spring is because Rachel Carson realized that spring was getting quieter and quieter because pesticides were killing the insects and killing the birds and really affecting the environment, and that had a deep impact on Jane leaving her studies in the jungle and going out into the wider world to be an environmentalist. So I hope that gives you of course you've had the opportunity to read it, but I hope that gives your listeners a feel for how each of the people in The World Is Just a Book Away discusses books that inspired them in life and moved them. many of them move them towards their purpose in life.
Well, so many of the people that are contribute to this book have done great things for this world, and some of them have been unknown until, you know, recently perhaps, but it's just amazing how much good you can do if you have the inspiration to do it. And you're a perfect example of that.
Thank you.
Now, are there any of, you know, we talked about you starting this to create your own reading list. Have you read the books that were recommended by these people?
I've had so much time to read that I've read them all. And just one of them is War and Peace in three volumes.
Oh, golly.
Isn't it interesting how life sort of plays with us in some ways, because my intention was to read more, and of course, with all the other beautiful things that happened, other than reading to my son, I've read less because I've had so much less time, and I don't mind that. I feel like I'm doing what I'm meant to do mm-hmm. with this book and for the children. But yes, I have started to, especially now that the past year really has been very intense in finalizing the book, and you of course have to have legal release forms from people and go back to the estates of the people who are no longer living.
Oh boy, yeah.
Very intense process of finalizing the book with incredible cooperation from so many people.
Wow.
But yes, now I have started. War and Peace is actually on my bedside table. I've just cracked that open because I haven't read it since I think I was maybe either in eighth grade or ninth grade when I read it last. And I'm reading Letters to a Young Poet, which Sharon Stone, Rilke's book, which Sharon Stone mentioned so eloquently in her submission, and I'd like to also say how supportive Sharon Stone has been. She just came last Saturday to the book launch to receive our annual Children's Literacy Champion Award, the Wejava Literacy Champion Award.
Wow.
And I heard the way she spoke about Rilke's work really inspired me to want to read that book. So those two are on my nightstand right now.
Well, one of the ones that I want to read, that of course I've heard of all my life, but I've never read, and that is President Kennedy's Profiles in Courage, which Senator Edward Kennedy writes about. I didn't realize what that actually was about. You know, that it was, I guess I assumed it was sort of like war hero kind of
things. Yeah, I did too.
And that isn't it at all, is it?
No, it's about lions of the Senate, people who really acted courageously. And sometimes, as Senator Kennedy so beautifully describes, sometimes to the detriment of their careers, people who really stood up against what they thought needed to be done or what they felt was wrong.
Yeah.
And as you probably can imagine, I'm Irish Catholic from Massachusetts. So the Kennedy family was always very present in my life and in my entire living memory. Senator Kennedy was the senator of, a senator in Massachusetts. And when he did this, would it be okay if I read the last two paragraphs of his? Because I think it's really...
Please do.
I'll read the last three paragraphs. And when he says my brother, he's speaking of President Kennedy. My brother would be interested to know that his book has inspired the Profile in Courage Award, given each year in his memory to an elected official from the local, state, or national level who has stood up for principle under great pressure and at great risk. Those honored with the award have had their achievements written about and documented as part of a sequel called Profiles, Profiles in Courage for Our Times, edited by his beloved daughter, Caroline. It proves to us that political courage was not just a thing of the past, and we can be very proud of that fact. Jack's book and the vital message it instills has a living legacy, and I know he would be especially pleased by that fact. Each time I pick up my copy of Profiles in Courage, I think of my brother and the lessons he taught me. Not a day goes by that I don't think of him and miss him. I reread the final sentences of his book, and I am reminded of him and his challenges to strive for the quality he admired most, courage. For as he wrote many years ago, these stories of past courage These stories of past courage can define that ingredient. They can teach. They can offer hope. They can provide inspiration. But they cannot supply courage itself. For this, each man must look into his own soul. Edward M. Kennedy, November 24th, 2003.
You're listening to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is James J. Owens, author of The World, or editor of The World is Just a Book Away. And you also have your own essay in here as well.
I do.
And do you want to tell us a little bit about how books, you know, what books inspired you?
That's such an interesting question, because when I started creating the book, I thought, people are asking me the question I'm asking them, and that's not such an easy question to answer.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
My book that I really go back to is a very unusual one that most people, in fact, it's right here in the bookshelf in my dining room beside me as we talk. My earliest memory is looking at a book my mother and I used to travel the world with when I was a little child, called The Encyclopedia of World Travel. And my earliest memory is of sitting in this sort of bluish, greenish chair in our living room, and I can remember fingering the weave of the chair because I would think of mountains and rivers and paths and things like that. And on the cover of the book, there's a picture of the pyramids of Giza, and I didn't know what they were. And I just have this very, you have those memories from childhood that there's just a memory that stands out amongst others that's really clear. And this is the clearest memory from my childhood, when looking at the photo on that book of the pyramids of Giza, and my mother telling me these were the pyramids, and they were built by pharaohs, and they're in the north of Africa. And I asked her if we could go there, and I grew up in the small town of Great Barrington in western Massachusetts, and she said, yes, we'll go there and we'll see the pyramids and we'll climb the pyramids and we'll ride a camel, because there's also a camel in the picture. And I lost my mother. My mother died when I was 9, and which is still the greatest tragedy I've experienced in life, and was really too much for me to bear as a child. That period I have very few memories of for the next 4 or 5 years. I really, my mind shut out life, and I escaped into books. Books were my refuge and savior at that time. But when I did begin to travel, and since then I've been blessed to travel all over the world, I did go to Egypt, and I climbed the pyramid, and I looked down, and it's almost hard to believe even as I say it, but as I was on top of the pyramid, a Bedouin rode up on a camel, and it was the exact image that is on the cover of that book. I took a picture of it from the top of the pyramid. And that moment in my 20s really cemented in my brain how important it is for children, for all of us, but particularly for children, to have access to books and reading. Because with that, they dream, and dreams really do become reality, but it has to start with the dream.
Yeah, that's right.
Mom, were there some essays in here that really stood out for you?
Well, the one of Queen Noor of Jordan, and I wrote down the book that she recommended because it's What's Right with Islam, and I'm really curious. There are so many hundreds of thousands of people who are in the world who are Muslims, so there's something right about it, and we only see the what's wrong. That, you know, people have taken it and twisted it into their own desires. But I'm sure that there's a great deal that I could learn from that. So I'm hoping to get that book.
Yeah. And that, I haven't had the opportunity to read that yet, but Her Majesty Queen Noor of Jordan has been very supportive of the book and of the charity. We have a library named in her honor, and she likes to get updates about it, and she's really her. I think if you summarize her message, it's that she's a bridge of peace, a bridge between cultures, and that we hear so much about the negative things associated with the religion, and this book that she highlights, What's Right with Islam, is focused on what it's really about, not what some people distort it to mean. And that's also definitely on my reading list to read Queen Noor's, the book Queen Noor has submitted.
Yeah, the book is
by Imam Faisal. I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce it, F-E-I-S-A-L. Imam Faisal Abdul Rauf, R-A-U-F, What's Right with Islam.
Yes.
Are there any more essays that you would particularly like to share with our listeners today, James?
I think I would like to share a few words from Meet Geese Who Hid the Anne Frank Family. Would that speak to you if I read from that one?
Yes, it would.
I think it's very powerful when she talks about the diary of Anne Frank. Mr. Frank was approached with the idea of permitting the diary to be translated and published abroad. He was against it at first, but then he succumbed to the pressure on him to allow the diary a more widespread audience. Again and again he'd say to me, "Meep, you must read Anne's writing." Who would have imagined what went on in her quick little mind? Otto was never discouraged by my continuing refusal. He would wait a while and then ask me again. Finally, I gave in to his assistance. I said, "All right, I will read the diary, but only when I'm totally alone." The next time I was totally alone on a warm day, I took the second printing of the diary, went to my room, and shut the door. With awful fear in my heart, I opened the book and turned to the first page. And so I began to read. I read the whole diary without stopping. From the first word, I heard Anne's voice come back to speak to me from where she had gone. I lost track of time. Anne's voice tumbled out of the book, so full of life, moods, curiosity, feelings. She was no longer gone and destroyed. She was alive again in my mind. I read to the very end. I was surprised by how much had happened in hiding that I had known nothing about. Immediately, I was thankful that I hadn't read the diary after my arrest during the final 9 months of occupation, while it had stayed in my desk drawer right beside me every day. Had I read it, I would have had to burn the diary, because it would have been too dangerous for people about whom Anne had written. When I read the last word, I didn't feel the pain I'd anticipated. I was glad I'd read it at last. The emptiness in my heart was eased. So much had been lost, but now Anne's voice would never be lost. My young friend had left a remarkable legacy to the world. But always, every day of my life, I've wished that things had been different. That even had Anne's diary been lost to the world, Anne and the others somehow might somehow have been saved. Not a day goes by that I do not grieve for them. Niepkies, May 3rd, 2009.
And she was how old when she signed that?
I believe that she was 100 that year, and she died shortly thereafter.
That's such a powerful piece of writing. It's just that essay itself. Yes.
And she, Mrs. Geese, of course, she was 100 at the time. She gave me permission. She gave me permission to reprint that from her own book.
Mm-hmm.
Which I felt very honored by. And she, as I said, she signed and dated it. Even though she was over 100 and she had stopped. Really, she corresponded with people until she was 100, but
oh,
been corresponding with her until about a decade prior to that. And
oh,
I was so grateful that she's in this book, because I think Mrs. Geese really is a symbol, again, of a true hero, even though she would never go by that word, who stood up to injustice from where she was.
Mm-hmm.
And for what she thought was right. And now the world has the diary of Anne Frank.
Right. How many of us, you know, reading that book as children, thought, I wonder if I could have been as brave as they.
Brave as she was.
Yeah.
And putting her life at risk every single day to help save the family. And as she indicates in the submission, putting her life inadvertently at risk in saving the diary.
Oh, absolutely. James, we're out of time, and I want to thank you so much for being with us here today on Writer's Voices. The world is just a book away. And check out the website.
Really honored.
WIJABA.org to support this important mission. And Mom, do you have some final words for us
I
today?
I do. As you reflect on your life, give gracious thanks for the person who taught you to read.
Stay tuned now if you're listening on Friday for Planet Erstwhile. We're rebroadcasting Monday morning if you want to hear parts you missed or listen to us again. And see you next week on Writer's Voices.
Thank you.
Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline is a production of KRUULP 100.1 FM, produced by Monica Hadley and James Moore. Archives available on KRUUFM.com and writersvoices.com.